Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Hello, this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
Oh, wait. I hear something. Oh, I think it's the final out at Fenway Park. Oh, my goodness. Is it because that Boston and, oh, my goodness, they're playing in the AL Championship Series? We're going to speak with Boston Red Sox president Sam Kennedy. It's a happy day for Lynchy. I see him dancing over there.
Yeah, I'm dancing on the Charles River. When that song was made by the Standells in the 1960s, the joke was the Charles River is so polluted you could walk across it. It's cleaned up now, and so have the Red Sox, going for another big, deep run in the postseason. And we're pretty excited here in the city of Boston.
So wait, Lynchy, that's the song that Fenway plays the same way that Yankee Stadium plays New York, New York?
Yeah, you have Sinatra in New York, New York, and we have the Standells with some dirty water in the Charles River.
Got it. Okay. What about Sweet Caroline? When does that happen?
That plays in the middle of the eighth inning.
Okay.
Win or lose.
Got it. Oh, wait, so this is only for games in which the Red Sox win?
The dirty water song, yeah.
What about when they lose?
The silence, crickets.
Drive safely.
People hang their heads in shame and walk out quietly.
Mm-hmm. Drive safely, as Barr said. We'll see you tomorrow night.
That is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. But first, we have to look at some of the top stories of the week. And there were two major stories that dominated not just the sports news cycle, but the news cycle in general. Let's start with Kyrie Irving. Now, in case people are not familiar with it, the Brooklyn Nets are saying, look, Kyrie, if you don't want to get vaccinated, that's your thing, but we have to move on as a basketball team. So we're not going to deal with you being on a part-time basis because you have to be vaccinated if you're playing in New York City. That's the rule in the city. And Kyrie Irving is not vaccinated, everybody. So what brings up the next point, too, is that, well, if Kyrie isn't vaccinated, it's not just New York City. Let's say, for instance, he was going on the West Coast, and there were some cities on the West Coast where maybe he couldn't play. So,
yeah, San Francisco, for instance.
Yeah. Where does this leave the league, folks?
Well, yeah, Boston is another place. He cannot come into the Boston Garden. That's the fourth, Madison Square Garden, Boston Garden, Chase Center in San Fran, and the Barclays Center. And this is going to cost him roughly $17 million in salary. Now, his salary for the away games still is hanging. It will be paid for that. But that's something that, you know, is going to be dealt with the Players Association. And, you know, Irving is, you know, it's an act of civil disobedience. He says, he says, I know the consequences of the decisions I make with my life. I'm not here to sugarcoat any of that. So he's ready to take this big financial hit.
What does that mean for the team? Because so many people were excited about what this upcoming season would bring with, you know, these incredible players that the Nets have amassed.
Well, James Harden has already said, it's like, okay, look, we respect you, Kyrie. This is your decision, but we have to move on as a team. Pretty much that's basically what he said.
I would think that his teammates would see this as an act of selfishness. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not thinking about the team. Most successful teams put we before me, and he's putting me before we. He reversed it.
And he's giving up. He was set to make $40 million this year in total.
Yep.
So, and he can't practice with the team, by the way, too. That's another thing. You can't practice. So even if he said, okay, I'm going to get the shot right now, you still got to get into a groove, and you better hurry up because preseason is going on right now, and there's not too many games in preseason.
No, and that's where you sort of form your cohesiveness with your teammates, especially there's always one or two new players that come in during the course of the offseason. And this is where you sort of, you know, work off a lot of the rust and get a little bit of chemistry. And part of it is, you know, getting along with your players, your teammates, and being unselfish and just going for a championship. He says he wants to continue to work towards a championship, but he may not play this year.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that if you've taken yourself out of the equation. And I just want to point out once again, I've done in the past, the NBA, the NFL, these men's professional sports leagues, they are struggling with convincing players in many instances to get vaccinated. I mean, yes, we know that for the most part, more than 90% of the NBA is vaccinated. But you compare that to the WNBA, 99% of the league's players fully vaccinated as of June.
So why does the NBA get it and the NBA, at least 10%, decide not to do this? I don't understand it. It's
women.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We all know that women are smarter, and obviously we see why. I don't understand for your job, I guess this gets into the whole political thing all over again, and I don't want to get into that. But if it's your job and it's for your team, I would think you would do it for your team.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to go across all businesses, but sports gets most of the headlines right now because these guys are visible, they're on television, and they're a guy like Kyrie Irving is a newsmaker, and he's, you know, he's been a recalcitrant.
And he made this into a circus as well.
Yeah, he did. You know, he came out, this latest statement came out on his own Instagram, and he posted it on Instagram for everybody to read and listen, and he likes being in the news. Yeah, he played here in Boston for a little while, and he was really kind of a pain in the neck. He was just a contrarian in everything that he did.
Was that the time that he thought that the Earth was flat?
Yeah. He thought the Earth was flat, and he was a bad teammate, and it was a very unpleasant experience here, and people in Boston were glad to get rid of him.
People talk about how this is part of their personal brand. Mm.
There was another story, and I am so disappointed, I cannot begin to tell you. John Gruden, now the former head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, he resigned because there were several emails that came to light that he sent to the Washington football team and to the head honchos there. And it also involved, let's put it this way, they were racist, they were misogynistic, they were homophobic. And I put my trust in John Gruden. I liked him as a coach when he won for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Super Bowl. I liked him when he was in the booth, when he was calling the games for football. And now I hear all of this. Scarlett, I just shake my head. I don't want to use the phrase, well, you made a mistake. You made this mistake, at least for what we know, for over 10 years.
Yeah, it was also drip, drip, drip of bad news for him in that the reporting from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, little bits and pieces came out. And as the reporting showed some of the comments he made, you knew there was much more than that. And that's exactly what happened. What I find fascinating is the degree to which there must be so many other people who share similar views as him, because this had happened years ago and these were just kind of casually included in email conversations, and they were uncovered because of something else entirely, right? I mean, the NFL was looking into workplace misconduct involving the Washington football team. There's nothing to do with John Gruden, and then they kind of came across this. But this is part of just what's available in the archives, and you wonder how much more is in there if anyone were to dig around. Gruden is not really an outlier in the NFL. He's from the system, right? He's a homegrown kind of guy. He's the son of a football scout and coach. He is one of the most recognizable faces in the league. He worked for iconic franchises. He was emailing a guy who's also in football hierarchy, football infrastructure. a member of a powerful NFL family. It's very insidious.
Well, I tell you what this reminds me of, folks. This reminds me of, let's say, for instance, you go out and you have several drinks, and then you hop behind the wheel of a car. Now, you're doing okay driving the car. Now, someone comes along, and like you said, Scarlett, this came out because of the Washington football team, all that controversy. And then another drunk driver comes along and hits you. Okay, the accident may not have been your fault, but now you're also going to get arrested because you got caught up because you're drunk. And this is what happened to John Gruden. I don't know what... I want to say so much, and I have to bite my tongue, Lindsay.
You know, this is... I'm waiting for Roger Goodell to step up and be a leader in all this stuff that's happening. There was a story that came out that a female member of the marketing department was offered some hush money by lawyers representing Daniel Snyder and the Washington football team, and she was offered to... she had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And she's one of 40 people that have had issues and brought complaints against the Washington football team. There was an investigation by attorney Beth Wilkinson. But you've got the Washington football team. You've got John Gruden. You've got Urban Meyer, who has video of him groping a woman in a restaurant in Ohio. Robert Kraft was never disciplined by the commissioner for his foray into the Orchids of Asia massage parlor. And where's the leadership? I mean, he slaps a 4-game suspension on Tom Brady for a suspicion of deflating a football, which is like basically having an overdue library book compared to some of these other offenses. Where's the leadership? And I think a lot of people are looking for answers here.
Well, you know, my wife said something, and she made up a very good point. One of the things that Gruden was guilty of, he had sent pictures of cheerleaders only wearing bikini bottoms. Now, my wife said something, and she said, well, never mind that he sent this on an email. Why would these women pose like that for the picture in the first place? And I said, yeah, you've got a good point. There's a lot of guilt to go around here, and Scarlett, you said it the best. We may be just scratching the surface. I wonder what is going on in the entire league about all of the thoughts and that Gruden had put out there. And the irony of the whole thing is Sam Nassib, who plays for the Raiders, who came out openly gay, and then your head coach, you find out, has been saying all of this.
Yeah, and ultimately, we'll be watching how the money reacts. Some of the money is walking already, right? Skechers announced that it terminated its relationship with John Gruden. I wonder if other NFL sponsors might come out and say anything about this, just to protest the way that the NFL has handled this. It seems like anything affiliated with Gruden is kind of shying away and creating some distance, but the sponsors are awfully quiet.
And The Athletic is reporting that he will have to forfeit his salary. Now, he signed a 10-year, $100 million deal. He's in the fourth year of that. So somewhere a little bit south of $70 million, according to The Athletic, will be forfeited by John Gruden.
Well, let's get to something, back to being happy.
Yeah, let's go. Let's come back to Boston.
Yeah, let's go back to Boston. I can't even do a good Boston. Boston.
No, leave it to Lynchy.
Yeah. Boston. Right. Yeah. Just park your car in Harvard Yard and go to Fenway Park and watch a game.
Coming up today, we're going to speak with Boston Red Sox president Sam Kennedy, but we got to give him a little present first. Let's start with the day that the Red Sox beat the Rays to advance.
On an 0-1 pitch, Hernandez hits it on center field. It is pulled in by Meadows. Here comes Santana. The Red Sox back in the championship series.
And the crowd goes wild. Sam Kennedy, thank you so much for being with us. That had to be a very happy day.
Well, Well, great to be with you guys, Mike and Mike and Scarlett. Thanks so much for having me. I'm sure the only reason you did that is because we have our hometown longtime friend, Mike Lynch, in studio. So thanks for that.
And see, this is the part of the show where I'm going to shut up because, you know, only a guy who, no, let's say it was WCVB. I think he was there when it was black and white. And then he's been broadcasting in the Boston area for years, Lynchy. Thank you, man. I'm going to sit back and just listen.
Well, Sam, this has been some type of ride. You know, we've seen this movie before, last place to first place. But just tell me about what's different about this year and the bump of the business of the Boston Red Sox as we head into the American League Championship Series.
Well, Lynchy, you and I have been around a long time. This is my 20th year with the organization. And I think... you know, there's a big difference, and that is the appreciation for all that is going on is even greater than we've had in the past. And I think that's related to the fact that we've all, the entire world literally has been living with this global pandemic, and our sense of normalcy has been taken away from us, and COVID has been so devastating. And to play games at Fenway Park with no fans in 2020 and across the league in the same fashion, and then a slow return to normalcy with limited capacity around the league and across sports, to see 38,000 people at Fenway Park against the Yankees for the wild card game and throughout the Tampa series, it was really emotional and rewarding. And there was an electricity inside the ballpark that, you know, it's got to be some recency bias, but I don't think we've ever seen that. Even going back to 03, 04 and those incredible series against the Yankees, there's just more electricity and intensity. It's probably because we were all so nervous as Bostonians back in 03 and 04, given it had been so long since we had won a World Series championship. But a noticeable difference, a younger crowd, more energy, more electricity, and I think it's a sort of a perfect storm of factors. But it really has been a different October, and we just hope we can keep it going here against the Astros.
It's a different October. It also looks like a different postseason as well, because you now have the Red Sox wearing their yellow jerseys. Give us the backstory here. How did that come about? And I mean, I know fans have gone bananas over them, and you can't keep them in stock. I'm sure they're going on eBay for a pretty penny. What was the genesis behind that?
Yeah, well, all the credit to Major League Baseball and our partners at Nike. They had the idea, as we're trying to grow the game, connect the game to a younger generation of fans, and specifically the cities in which we play. The idea was a program called City Connect, and it was really born out of trying to create a simple alternate uniform that really connects the team to the city in which they play. And our marketing group and partnership group led by Adam Grossman and Troop Parkinson deserve the credit for working with Nike to come up with probably the most well-known institution associated with the city of Boston, and that is the Boston Marathon. Of course, you know, hundreds of years of history running from Hopkinton to Boston, but obviously took on a new meaning across the globe when 2013 happened with the bombings at the finish line, and we all lived through that. So anyway, they came up with a look and feel that connected the Red Sox to the great Boston Marathon, and it's just been very well received, and our players, you know, the idea was just to wear them on the marathon weekend over Patriots Day, which is a huge tradition here. We have that 11 a.m. start. It's the best sports day in Boston. But as the team was scuffling in the second half, and especially in September, they decided to try the uniforms on. We're nothing in baseball if not for our superstition. So they started wearing those yellow uniforms, and we ran off seven in a row, which really helped as we tried to survive in the American League East.
Oh, yeah, and now you have to – let's spin the clock forward to this past week, several days ago, when you had the marathon – You had the Red Sox playing at Fenway Park. It was a good day to run the marathon because getting into the city, you were doing it best by foot, which is a great thing because it brought so much to the city. And those local businesses, they had to love it.
Yeah, it's been really tough for all of the entire country and Boston and New England, Massachusetts, no exception. So to see those runners coming across the finish line on Boylston Street and to have the local businesses, the local economy get going again, just a huge credit to the way our political leaders, Governor Charlie Baker, Mayor Kim Janey, the way they've handled COVID, Marty Walsh prior to leaving us for the presidential administration. They've just all done a great job, and we actually have been open as a city since Memorial Day, going back to May 29th, and we're slowly building back up here. We know we're not done, but the economy's coming back, and it's especially important for the small businesses in and around Fenway Park, and we're very mindful of that.
Sam, let me ask you about Alex Cora going back to Houston. He's going to just face a barrage of questions, obviously. Every single interview, every camera is going to be locked on him all the time. I know he's got the DNA to handle this thing. What makes him so special to be able to handle all the stuff that's going to be coming at him and when they start referencing back to 2017, et cetera?
Yeah, I think you're right, Lynchy. He's the right guy to handle this. I mean, the simple fact is that Alex did something wrong. He was a part of a scandal that was not a proud moment for him or for baseball. And you know, he handled it exactly how you would sort of teach your kids to handle something. When you do something wrong, you admit it, you apologize, you serve your penalty, and you do it with humility and grace. And he, you know, let a lot of emotion out the other night, Monday night, when we beat the Rays. You saw him with his family, and it's exactly why we brought Alex Cora back. You know, he deserved a second chance. We knew if you go back to 05, he's been an amazing member of this organization as a player and now as our manager. So we wanted him back, and the way he handled what went down led us to believe he was the right guy to bring back. That doesn't excuse what's happened in the past, and he'll be the first to acknowledge it and admit it. So my guess is he'll continue to do what he's done from the beginning, which is tell the truth, answer every last question, and hopefully then move on and keep the focus on the job at hand, which is trying to beat a very, very good version of the Houston Astros. We really have our work cut out for us. But there'll be a lot of attention and focus, lots of storylines. But he's the right guy to handle that, and hopefully we can keep this thing going.
Sam, I've always had this idea, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. You guys need to make mini Fenway Parks. And you make that, I'm telling you, it will sell like gold. I'll be in line if you sell something like that in the souvenir department. Speaking of souvenirs, that has to be going off the hook right now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I might take the rest of the day off. That's a great idea, and we appreciate it. We look for good ideas from all corners of the world, so appreciate that. But no, it's look, the business of baseball and our industry had been decimated by the impacts of COVID. It's pretty obvious. When you don't have fans, you don't have revenue, and we kept the seasons going. So of course we had our expense base, which is our employees and our players, and so we've navigated a really tough time as an industry, taking on a lot of debt, like a lot of businesses, to navigate the pandemic. But seeing what's happened over the last couple of months has been so rewarding. And actually, the other night, I took an iPhone video. I never do that. I was with my kids, and they said, "You know, Dad, what are you doing? You don't post things on social media." I said, "No, I just want to have this video of 38,000 people going absolutely crazy, so I can look back on it in December, January, and when it's cold and dark here in New England, and remind myself how far we've come from the days of empty ballparks to limited capacity ballparks to a full house. It's just been remarkable, and it's been great for the economy, great for the baseball business to get going, and we need to build on that momentum as we go into 2022.
So when you build on that momentum, I'd like to hear what you're doing, what the club is doing to really bring younger fans into its fold. Obviously, we went through a year in which people weren't able to go see games live, and there's a new appreciation for being able to gather publicly and share the joys of being together in public. How are you reaching out to this younger fan base and bringing them into Red Sox lore?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Scarlett. There's it's a particular area of focus for us in our organization, and there's several different initiatives we have. First and foremost, probably the way Lynchy and I, growing up in New England, fell in love with the Red Sox, and it's not just the team, but it's the ballpark. We have got to get young fans to Fenway Park to experience the magic of Red Sox baseball, the magic of Fenway Park. And one reality of that is price. We have to be affordable. We need fun, affordable family entertainment. So for the last several seasons, we've created what we call a Student 9 program. We affirmatively hold back thousands of tickets every single game and price them at $9. So if you are a middle school student, a high school student, a college student, you can come to the ballpark the day of the game and get tickets for $9. It's really important, and it helps grow that next generation. It's an investment in our future. We specifically want it to be less than the cost of a movie ticket, and it's really worked well. We've gotten lots of young people into the park. We've also seen the added benefit. It creates a totally different atmosphere. Yeah. The players notice it on television. So that's been great. Secondly, we've launched Fenway 3.0, and we're developing real estate in the neighborhood anchored by a new 5,000-person entertainment venue directly adjacent to Fenway. It's about a $150 million investment. We're going to be opening in September of 2022. We'll have live music. We'll have esports. We'll have all sorts of different activities for that next generation of fans. So that will really help. And then third and finally, we've got to connect to young families and young kids and where they are, and that's on a mobile device. So we're authenticated streaming games through NESN on an authenticated basis. We go direct to consumer on MLB.tv around the country so kids can consume games on their phones, and we're working on figuring out how we can do that in the market.
Is that open to all fans or just fans with tickets, Sam?
In terms of the streaming, it's open to all fans. Anyone who has a phone can access MLB.tv. If you're a Red Sox fan or any fan of baseball outside of the New England market, inside of the New England market, you have to be a customer of NESN, New England Sports Network. And so it's a way to really make sure our product is seen on where kids are, and that's on their phones.
You know, Sam, I think it's working. I just was watching the replay of the game the other night, and every time there was a cutaway in the stands, I said, God, there's a really younger demographic here at Fenway Park.
Now you know, $9 tickets.
Well, yeah, it's working. And I think you made a good point. I think that's part of the vibe and the electricity that's going on in the ballpark.
It really is. And I'll tell you, I give Alex Cora a lot of grief. I call him DJ AC because he's been on me for a couple of years about the music and, you know, the traditional organ playing. Don't get me wrong, Josh Cantor is still the organist, does a great job, but we do mix in louder, more energetic music that caters to a different generation. So it's a balance. You know, we've got 3 million tickets to sell every year. We want Fenway Park to be the place to be, and it is, and a winning baseball team certainly helps.
Sports gambling. Sorry. I get excited when that comes out because Massachusetts going online now for sports gambling. It's something that is taking off around the nation. What are your thoughts about gambling online? Not only, obviously, as the head of a major sports organization, but just in general.
Yeah, well, I think that Major League Baseball, the NBA, the PGA Tour have formed a coalition and an alliance to make sure that sports betting is handled properly with respect to integrity. Has been so helpful for those of us individual clubs. You know, when the Supreme Court overruled the prior legislation that banned sports betting, we all knew we needed to get prepared. And so the leagues mobilized and have worked on a program to make sure that the most important thing is front and center in how all of this is handled, and that is the integrity of the game. We've set up controls at the league level to make sure that you have integrity, because if you don't have that, you don't have anything in our sports. As it relates to the business opportunity associated with it, we see it very much as a positive. Lots and lots of engagement will come from legal regulated activity, and that's a good thing. I also think it's a good thing that Massachusetts has taken a bit of a wait-and-see approach. The legislature is studying what's happened in other markets and sort of trying to take the best practices from other markets like New Jersey that have legalized. And the governor, Charlie Baker, has been very thoughtful about it. So there's different bills being discussed, negotiated. That's obviously way above my pay grade, but the House and the Senate will continue to discuss, debate. Ultimately, the governor would sign any legislation into law, and then when they do, we'll be ready to make sure that we operate under those guidelines. Also, Major League Baseball has a whole set of guidelines in terms of security and the integrity, but it will offer great engagement because there. Let's be honest, there's illicit activity taking place in a mobile environment, offshore betting now in municipalities where it's not legal. So to have that regulation will be a good thing, and to have that engagement will be a good thing, and it'll be a business benefit to the sports industry for sure.
That's where I want to pick up. You talk about best practices and learning from that. What about worst practices? What are the things you see out there in other states that alarm you and that you know would not work in Massachusetts for your organization?
I actually think the municipalities have been very thoughtful because they've really had the advantage of working with the leagues and also examining best practices in other countries around the world. So there's nothing alarming. I think mobile is critically important. It's just where we are in our society. And so I think that's a critical piece of any legislation. I do think Commissioner Manfred has been really wise in terms of setting up guidelines in terms of how much sports betting advertising you can take and promote. I don't think he wants our industry to be overwhelmed. So I think we'll definitely take a walk before we run approach and study what's worked really well. But there's nothing out there that's alarming or concerning in terms of what we've seen to date.
Do you foresee the day when there are kiosks inside a ballpark, DraftKings, FanDuel, or whoever your partner may be?
Yeah, I do, Lynchy. We're involved as Fenway Sports Group. We have ownership of Liverpool Football Club over in England, and it's common practice over there, and it's all regulated, and it works really, really well. I don't see a huge difference from the ability to place a bet right on your phone, right at your, in your pocket, and versus having a physical kiosk. The digital world and the real world have become so closely aligned. I don't see a huge difference between the two, and I think it just makes sense. Once sports betting becomes legal in a certain jurisdiction, it's legal, and so I don't see a huge distinction between mobile and offline or sort of brick and mortar style betting. To me, it's all sort of one and the same.
Lindsay, you got to give Sam your special award. I want to sit back and hear that.
Oh boy.
Well, for about 40 years, when I was the sportscaster at the ABC affiliate in Boston, we had a weekly high five award, which we gave to a high school student athlete of the week. And Sam Kennedy has reminded me several times that he never was selected as the high five of the week, although he was an outstanding baseball and hockey player at Brookline High School, a stone's throw from Fenway Park. And the only requirement for high five is that you must be in high school. So I went through the the charter of High Five, and I found this little clause. If you still look like you're in high school and you still act like you're in high school, you can make an exception and award someone who is actually not in high school. So, Sam Kennedy, I am presenting you years later the High Five Award for this week and for this year and for your 20 years with the Red Sox for a great meritorious service. Here is your High Five, pal.
Lynch, you have no idea how meaningful this is to me. On behalf of all the mediocre to poor high school athletes across the Commonwealth, and specifically my old baseball teammate Theo Epstein, I think I'll accept it on behalf of both of us because we used to always look forward to the High Five Award, and unfortunately knew that neither of us would ever qualify. But this means more than you'll ever know. We still actually have a gathering of a couple of us who were involved in the 1991 Brookline High School Barnstable Division I State Ice Hockey Championship at the old Boston Garden. Yeah. I will tell you that we lost that game, but we still get together to celebrate as if we won that game. So that's how important high school athletics is here in New England. You celebrate even the losses in the state championship mean something.
Hey, Scarlett, does this sound like one of those Sally Field moments? They like me. They really like me.
They do, yes. Mike Lynch, you
Your
did a good thing there.
Listeners say, who cares about local? What are you doing, Sam?
This is a long time coming. I mean, I hear that this has been a friction point between the two of you for a while.
You know, I don't think there's any. It's impossible to have friction with Mike Lynch. I grew up here, been around a long time. I don't, with 14 million crazy sports fans in and around New England, you can't find anyone who doesn't like Mike Lynch. So it's quite an achievement.
Well,
thanks,
I'm honored to sit in on this, and it's like the Academy Awards participatory moment. This was great. Sam Kennedy, what an honor. My goodness. Good luck to you guys as you go on into the series, and I am delighted for Boston, and like you said at the beginning, Boston strong, and now you guys are super duper Boston strong. And maybe one day also you can teach like your counterparts in football how to win a Super Bowl for the Detroit Lions. Well, first we got to get to the Super Bowl.
Let's walk before you run.
Yeah, I know. I'm way ahead. Sam Kennedy, thank you so much, sir.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
I have to get a little bit of the goosebumps because I'm still a fan of sports. Lynchy, we talked to Boston Red Sox president Sam Kennedy.
Good guy. Grew up in the shadow of Fenway Park, as we discussed a little bit earlier. He's been with the organization for 20 years. He gets it. I mean, this conversation was so open and candid. There wasn't one canned response. There wasn't one response that was written up by a PR person. That's who Sam Kennedy is. And, you know, his leadership is really reflected in the ballpark. I mean, there's a different vibe around there when you walk through there. And if you watch some of the cutaways next week when the three games are scheduled in Boston, you'll see, you know, younger people, a lot of younger people that are really just interested in this. And I think that, you know, this initiative he has of $9 tickets for high school and college students, it's amazing. Normally you'd have to pay like $100 to get in and get a decent seat in the ballpark like that. And they don't need to cut prices because they sell out every single night. And I think that's a great initiative.
You know, I wonder, and this is, again, something we didn't get to ask him because we're so caught up in just what's happening with the Red Sox right now in the postseason, is how much money the Red Sox make from allowing, I don't know, movies and TV shows to film at Fenway, because it shows up quite a bit in pop culture, right? It was in Fever Pitch. It was in The Town, which, of course, was directed by local Boston guy Ben Affleck. Lynchy, I don't know how you say Ben Affleck with a Boston accent, but...
Ben Affleck.
Okay. No. All right. There we go. But it shows up a lot, and obviously someone has to pay the Boston Red Sox something to be able to film there. Fenway Park, I just realized, is registered in the National Register of Historic Places, but it is not actually a National Historic Landmark, unlike Wrigley.
Well, you know, they have actually 365 days a year, probably 363 days a year, probably not on Thanksgiving or Christmas. But they have tours that when the Red Sox are out of town or out of season, you can come in, you pay $7 or $10, and they have a tour of Fenway Park, and they take you every place. They take you into the Green Monster, above the Green Monster, into the bowels of the stadium. And it's, you know, many of the games, all the games are sold out, and I always say that they could be playing the New York Yankees or the Bad News Bears. They're going to bang the place out and hit 38,000 people because people just want to come there and see the place. I remember vividly the first time I saw Fenway Park. I was with my dad. It was 1960, Ted Williams last year, and just walking up the ramp behind home plate, and the first thing I saw was the Green Monster. I said, holy mackerel, look at the size of that thing. It looked like the Empire State Building to me. It's 37 feet high, but it looked like, you know, 37,000 feet high to me, and the green grass. And we all remember it the first time we go to a ballpark anywhere.
I still think of that thought of Cecil Fielder blowing it out of Fenway Park. And that was doing something. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So
my goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
Time now for the number of the week. You all know, love this stuff.
This should just be sponsored by Mike Lynch.
Since we're talking about the Boston Red Sox, and Lynchy is hoping that they will make their march to the World Series. I want to go back in history. October 1st, 1903. This was the first modern World Series in baseball. It was against Pittsburgh and Boston. Game one. I'm going to ask. Now, Pittsburgh, by the way, they won the series. But I'm asking game one. How many runs were scored between Pittsburgh and Boston? I'm not going to tell you who won.
Combined. I mean, you either go really low or really high. I'll go low.
Was this when they played like a best of nine or something like that?
Yeah.
I think that was won in like eight games.
Right.
1903. They didn't play at Fenway. I don't know, 5-4. I'll go 9.
Scarlett?
15.
Oh, I wish you would have just went one more.
10. That was my strategy before.
Pittsburgh won game one, 7-3. Boston scored 3 runs. Back in the day, in 1903, but I know Lynchy is thinking now, I hope in 2021 that the Red Sox just annihilate it. Yeah.
I hope they're just playing, period. How about that?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
So nine comes in under. I mean, by the Price is Right rules.
Price is Right rules, you come up on stage. You get to play Plinko.
Thank you very much. All right. I never won anything in my life.
Well, except for number of the week, every week.
Number of the week, yeah. Which nets me nothing but a little handshake and a little clap. That's about
it. Bragging rights among the three of us.
Copy of the home game, you know, it's good. But this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports Show. We're here each and every week at the same time, plus online wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch those Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm Mike Lynch. Thanks again to our good friend, Sam Kennedy, president of the Red Sox, and good luck, Sox. We'll see you at Fenway Park. I'm Lynchy. You can follow me at LynchyWCVB.
And honorary awardee of the High Five Award, right?
Yes, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, see? Yeah. I'm Scarlett Fu. You can catch me on Twitter at Scarlett Fu.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.